In today's episode of the Sixers Beat, Rich and I go over the Sixers' last three games, including wins over the Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic. We talk about who has stepped up here in the absences of James Harden, Joel Embiid, and Tyrese Maxey. And then we give our thoughts on how they can continue that play when the Sixers stars all return. Enjoy the podcast. All right, welcome everybody. This is Derek Bodner, joined by Rich Hoffman on the Sixers Beat, a part of the Athletics Podcast Network. How you doing, Rich? It has been a little while. We did a podcast real early there on Monday before the Brooklyn game. There's been a lot that has happened. Not so much from your three main stars. We will get into that, but a lot that has happened. How you doing?
I'm doing great, man. How was Thanksgiving? Do you like Thanksgiving?
How could I not like Thanksgiving? I like food. I mostly enjoy my family in moderation. It's a good holiday for me. It's a very good holiday.
that's a fair way to put it. I don't know. You see all these hipster takes online. I shouldn't say hipster takes, but people just trying to be contrarians, being like, oh, I hate food. I hate turkey, all this stuff. And it's like, all right, well.
I do think the turkey tends to be overrated. It is not my favorite part of Thanksgiving. But it brings out the creative side of cooks in my family, and I enjoy that. Yeah.
My general point is, like, you can just douse it with gravy. Who cares? Okay,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to argue about food because people, first off, they get crazy about it, and two, I don't think it's that interesting or whatever. But anyway, I like Thanksgiving, so I've had a good week.
Yeah. No, and I've avoided all shopping. I don't partake in Black Friday at all. I will buy an occasional thing online, but I do not go out in stores. I've not done that in a very long time, so I have not had any of the downsides of this weekend either.
I used to get a kick out of, at my Thanksgiving, after the dinner was over, somebody would turn on the TV, and usually the Cowboys are playing at that time. They play in the 4 o'clock time slot. But sometimes, you know, you'd flip over and you'd see Action News, and there would be people already shopping and in line for Black Friday, which I think is happening less now because of COVID and...
Yeah.
A lot of it is online. That said, if you ever did that in your life, you're a psychopath. I'm sorry.
Well, I've got a psychopathic aunt then. She, every year, she's up real early on Black Friday, a couple years before COVID.
Early? I'm talking 6 o'clock.
Oh, no. She would go after Thanksgiving, when, especially right before COVID, stores started opening up on Thursday night a lot. She would go out there for that. Yeah.
See, I don't do it at all, but I draw the line. It better be Friday when you're doing it. Okay. That's all.
No, a couple of years back, I went out just to watch Mayhem for a couple minutes, and I regretted it, and I'm never going back out there. I will buy online, and I will pay whatever percent increase to save my sanity. Anyway, Philadelphia 76ers, who have not been killing my sanity lately, which is a surprise, it's a deviation from what we're used to, have won, I believe it is 9 of the last 14 games. They're 9-5 since that 1-5 start. They've won 5 of the last 7. Not a murderer's row of opponents, although the Bucks win mixed in there. The Jazz, who were playing very well, but you've got some games against the Magic and the Hornets and things like that. Overall, I think they have exceeded my expectations here without their three stars.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Joel is going to miss tonight's game against the Magic as well. They are playing pretty good basketball, led by your boy Shake Milton, who has just been on fire here. And playing not only as a scorer, because we've seen him in small doses be a really good scorer, but as a playmaker. Paul Reed is playing well. George Niang continues to play exceptional basketball. What is your biggest takeaway here over this stretch run here? Not stretch run, because we're not at the stretch run. Over this stretch without Harden, Embiid, and Maxey.
Shake is my biggest take, but let me quickly say something about Doc Rivers. I'm just imagining a 2-15 or 3-14 first round NCAA tournament game. I don't care who the teams are. If it was Doc Rivers coaching against Doc Rivers in that game, there is no question in my mind the lower seed wins that game like 85% to 90% of the time.
Yeah.
It's crazy that his best work comes when they're completely undermanned. And this has been the case in past years, and it's certainly been the case this week. Okay. But that's something we already knew. We knew Doc does a good job when they're completely shorthanded and there's no reason they should be winning these games. They play well. Shake is the biggest take. Good rhyme there. I have been hard on him, as you've mentioned plenty of times.
Harder in person than on the podcast.
But he was bad. And but here's the problem. I didn't properly account for the reason why he was bad. I think he, more than anyone, is a rhythm basketball player. I think a lot of times we use the excuse, oh man, he's not getting his normal touches. He, you know, he's not getting his normal playing time. And sometimes, like, yeah, if you give him more playing time, yeah, they'll score more, but you know, what are we exactly talking about? But Shake Milton, more than anyone I have seen in the NBA in recent years, he needs the ball in his hands and he needs regular minutes. Those two things. You hear that, look, you hear that all the time with guys like, I don't know, Charles Bassey and Isaiah Joe, who to his credit, he had a big game a couple days ago, Isaiah Joe. But it's more true with Shake. Like, I think when most teams' 11th man are given the keys to the offense, they're going to put up some points, but they're not going to play winning basketball. Shake is actually capable of doing that for you, which makes the play when he's not the featured guy a little more frustrating, but that's who he is. So, like, when Harden has the ball the entire game, I'm thinking back to last season's playoffs against Toronto, when Shake is getting cameo minutes and he's just taking three catch-and-shoot threes and that's basically all he's doing,
yeah,
he can make those shots. But I feel like that happens more when he's involved in the offense. And look, Joel, he complimented his pocket passing after the, I think it was after the Bucks win last week.
Is that the same press conference where he said, my favorite memory of Shake was when I told him I wanted to slap him?
That was amazing.
He left off a key point. He said he wanted to slap the shit out of him. He didn't say that in the presser, but he said that in real life.
What a game that was. Do you remember?
My greatest memory with Shake is when I told him I wanted to slap him in the bubble. He's come a lot since then, or something like that. He didn't even apologize for wanting to slap him. He just said he's grown a lot. It was great. It was a fantastic Joel moment.
Well, that was when Shake was the starting point guard in the bubble for a little while.
Yep.
And that also was the game where TJ Warren lit up Ben Simmons to a degree. I've never seen Ben Simmons get lit up like that, even now. Maybe Luka got him a couple weeks ago. That was a very memorable game where Shake is wearing the headband and he is the starting point guard, you know, Brett Brown's last hurrah. Yeah. The other funny thing Joel does with Shake, do you remember a couple times, like, I think it was last year, he was talking about all the team's three-point shooters, and he basically was like, look, man, we got guys who can make threes on this team. We got Ferk, we got Seth, we got all these guys. He goes, we got Shake, even though I think he should shoot a little bit better. Basically, like, he gives him a little dig every once in a while. So it's a funny little relationship there. But he complimented his pocket passing the other night. And Shake has those long-ass pterodactyl arms that allow him to make passes, even though he's not a great athlete. Like, part of the reason
his pocket pass isn't really coming from the pocket pass, because he needs to stretch out those arms a little bit. It's a little to the side.
It's very unorthodox, but the fact that he is a 6'5 guy with a 7-foot wingspan, and you can see it on defense now, he's making some plays too. He makes use of those super long arms really well. And Shake has craft with that in-between game. He can finish in a variety of ways. He can finish off either foot. He's good in transition when he has a head of steam. Like, he's pretty good at attacking, using those long arms to finish in a very efficient manner, I would say. Like, his movements are very efficient. And he has a good knowledge of how to play in the pick and roll. So I think what I erred in bashing Shake for a lot of this year is that he, more than any player, and you could see it in the stats, like, it's not just that his points have gone up, his efficiency has gone up.
Oh, he's scoring, I have the stats here, he's scoring 20.7 points over the last three games on 53.5% from the field and 50% from three. Like, these aren't hollow numbers, to your point. They are efficient numbers.
And if you look at the per-minute numbers, they're a lot better.
Yep.
The, like, early in the season, he was making these ridiculous decisions. Like, he was just completely out of sorts. But I think the lesson here is that Shake Milton, when he has the ball in his hands, can figure some shit out. Like, he, when he gets into a rhythm and he gets, you know, 10, 12 pick and roll calls a game, he is better at ramping his usage up than your normal 11th, 12th man. And I think that's something he has proven throughout his career.
Yeah. And besides the scoring, and the scoring's been nice, especially against the, I believe it was the Nets game, where coming down in the fourth quarter, he had a couple of those real big pull up mid-range jumpers when they were, you know, Brooklyn was threatening to make a little bit of a run. He also had a couple of really bad turnovers during that stretch, so he was part of the reason Brooklyn was making that run, but he helped hold them off with some of those jumpers. But really, it's been the pick and roll passing. Like, I'm specifically thinking of a couple of when he had, you know, Trez rolling to the rim, and he's making sort of like these bounce pass, like wrap around the defender kind of passes that, I'm going to say this, and it's probably going to sound like I'm giving Shake too much credit, but legitimately the only other person on the team that has a creativity to make that pass is James Harden. Now, that is not me saying Shake Milton is as good of a passer as James Harden. Don't twist it. It is that you have a lot of people real low on the creativity scale on his team. Then you have Shake Milton. Then way ahead of that, you have James Harden. So I'm not comparing him to James Harden in any way. But he has shown creativity, especially on the pick and roll, especially finding rollers, especially Montrez, that I'm not sure I ever saw him have before. And maybe that's just a product of getting the ball more. Maybe that's a product of getting the ball more in a pick and roll heavy system and really having a rolling big man for the first time in his career. Because when he was sort of like that pick and roll player for a little bit back in the bubble before Ben Simmons got hurt, you know, Ben Simmons wasn't a traditional rolling big. He was sort of playing that short role there. So Trez is rolling harder. Paul Reed is rolling harder than anyone's ever played with. But I've never seen him really have this kind of creativity and timing off the pick and roll. And that's been real fun to see. It's real fun to see because of the two big backup big men he would theoretically be playing with when your stars come back. And it's a skill set that they need right now. And quite frankly, I think they need going forward. You know, if they are able to, we talked a lot about you have James Harden and then you have real no other plus passers. And you have James Harden and Tyrese Maxey, and then you have no other real even lead guard ball handlers. There's a real depth and or a real shortage of both, a lack of a depth, I guess is what I was going for, of both of those skill sets. And if he can take what he's doing now and apply it into a shorter minute run when the stars get back, Sixers would really benefit. So I guess we'll swing this conversation back to you now. How can they take what he's doing now and find some way to get some reasonable facsimile of it when Harden and Maxey come back?
That's the issue, right? Because he has not shown that he can do that in smaller bursts, or not consistently shown he can do that in smaller bursts. And yeah, just listening to you talk, with Shake, there is the outline of a playoff player where the playoffs are about, what are your weaknesses? Like, what do, can you play a guy because of his killer weakness? He doesn't have a lot of killer weaknesses. He can do a lot of stuff pretty well, including shoot pretty well. Even though his shot is, I don't know, funkier and different than it was. It's just more disjointed. I don't understand why, but whatever. He's starting to make him a little bit.
I think Mike Levin says that he looks like he's shooting a medicine ball. And sometimes it looks like he's shooting a heavy ball. Yeah.
It really does. But whatever. It's starting to go in. And that's, look, I think that's a great question. And it's something that if you pay attention to the Sixers, it's the first thing that comes to mind when you watch. I would say Shake in particular, but the combination of Shake and Melton playing so well together. Yep. Notice I didn't say Milton and Melton.
Yeah, it's tough.
But watching those guys perform really well here.
Almost like, as tough as Cole Anthony. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Anthony Cole. I think the Sixers have a real question when all the guys come back. You know, James Harden was second in time of possession in the NBA when he got hurt. Only behind Luka Doncic, who literally has his ball in the ball in his hands the entire game. It's insane. And also unsustainable, even though he's Luka freaking Doncic. That's too much. I think the result of the plays are fine, that Harden and, you know, the passing and all of those things, but a slow paced style where he surveys the defense is not. And look, there are two ways, in my estimation, that a team can be hard to guard. The first is that they have really good players. I believe the Sixers have that. When they're healthy, their top three guys are hard to guard. And the second is that they run good sets. They're playing with continuity. The ball's hopping. That was not the case enough early in the season when the star players had played. And that's just not the case with Harden either. Like the Joel 59-point game, that was an ISO fest too. Yeah. And when I watch somebody like Shake, when I watch DeAnthony playing well, when I watch Tobias playing well, Niang, who we can talk about in a little bit, who's been awesome this season, and then you have Maxey and Embiid, too. There needs to be more of a cohesive team identity here. Like, there needs to be a combination of you have good players, but also the ball is moving and you're playing with more continuity and there's more player movement. Because this can't just be James Ball. These guys are more talented than the marathon. The Rockets had four marathon mans out there when Harden was playing.
He hit a big shot.
Oh,
it was the only shot since our last podcast, but he hit a big shot.
He is. I mean, watching him play, by the way, like, it's so painful on offense, but he's helping
incredible.
Them.
He's incredible on defense. Yeah.
He's helping them a lot. And you know what? He's giving them big minutes. But again, like, he is the one, maybe House is the other guy. The two Rockets guys are the very limited players who, yeah, okay, if you want Harden to isolate for a long time, that's fine. There are too many other guys on this team who could do a little bit with the ball in their hands. And I don't know what the answer to that is, except Harden has to get off the ball faster and Bede has to roll and not isolate quite as much, get off the ball faster. They need to find a way to incorporate these guys because they have more talented eighth and ninth men than the average team. They just do offensively.
Well, and Harden getting off the ball faster, the problem with that is when he's off the ball, he's legitimately useless. He does not move at all. He doesn't really look for that shot. He comes back to the ball.
It's not easy. Yeah, I agree with you.
And also, like, now that he's feeling better physically, I don't think he's going to want to play that style. I think he wants the ball. I think he wants to be maybe not Houston James Harden, but, you know, more than he was last year. I think last year he willingly came off the ball a little bit because he knew he didn't have it. I think now he wants to, you know, he's feeling a little frisky. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. It is tough. Like, I think maybe Shake's role is just that, you know, when all your stars are healthy, he is a, you know, mostly inoffensive, mediocre role player. And when somebody gets injured, he can ramp up and sort of fill a little bit of that void. And I think he can even ramp up a little bit, like if Joel's out, and even if Harden and Maxey are there, you know, if you put him with Harrell, you put him with Reed, and you ask him to run a couple of minutes there with that second unit, maybe that's how he ramps up even when Embiid's out. I don't know. I when everyone's healthy, it would be great to get this version of Shake more consistently. I'm with you. I don't entirely know how they do it. And to be honest, like, this isn't the most pressing. Like, Shake could have a very small role and they'll probably still be fine offensively for the most part because they do have that much talent. Like, maximizing Shake isn't necessarily the goal.
No.
But you would like to bridge the gap of what he's doing now with what he was doing to start the season. I don't know.
There's a balance there. He's not getting 10 pick and roll calls a game when all of those guys are healthy. He's not. It's not the best use of your resources. That said, the ball needs to find him on the weak side once in a while because he's pretty good when he gets it. Like, he's okay at it. I would say one thing, especially for him, when everybody comes back, I would like to see him on the backup units with Joel Embiid pretty much every minute they play together. And that's probably a Milton Maxey backcourt. Maybe you play D'Anthony a little bit. I guess the D'Anthony minutes are something you look for. But I would like to see him play with Joel because I think he can get the ball to Joel in those pocket pass situations. I also think he's a slightly better defender. Well, he's definitely a way better defender than Harden just because of his arms and his effort. I would like to see that. But
yeah, I agree.
Yeah, look, it's a bigger philosophical question. It's not just really him that made me wonder. Like, their offense left me cold to start the year. I thought it would be easier. I thought they would be I don't know. I thought their sets and their continuity would be harder to guard after it was for a decent amount last season. And they need to get back to that because their guys are proving that they're pretty good. I guess we didn't talk about the Nets game.
We did not.
First off, that was a great win. Like, that was
a very good win. Yeah.
And I think more than anything, that win showed, you know, we could talk about Shake and the offense and all those things. That showed character.
Especially from Tobias. Tobias coming back like that, and I forget what he had in the second half, but he was tremendous after that injury. That was a real character performance from Tobias and the team in general, for sure.
And it's just like the Orlando win the other night, too. Yes, these guys are showing that they're more capable, but they're also just showing, like, they're gamers. Like, they play hard. They're not giving up when they're undermanned. I know they're not playing great teams, although, look, Orlando got Banchero back for that game. Also, Bol Bol is tremendous to watch, by the way. I love that he's actually a pretty good player now.
I know he was a decently regarded recruit before he had an injury. I didn't really buy it coming into the draft. I didn't see him pop like that. He's really improved. He's a very legitimate player.
That Sixers Magic game on Friday, and I assume on Sunday after you're listening to this, what an athletic mismatch. What a contrast in styles. Yeah, the very small and groundbound Sixers versus the super long team. But you know what? The Sixers got some transition buckets against them. They did a good job. But I think that Nets game especially, like, that was a game the Nets should have been up for. and they weren't for whatever reason. And the Sixers, that was awesome. I guess we got to go over the Ben stuff. I thought the Jordan shrug was one of the funniest things I have ever seen.
It was. I think a lot of people are like angry at him for it. Like, why are you shrugging when all you did was make two free throws? Like, the whole arena was booing him. Like, I actually liked a little bit of a response from him.
He made both of them too. Although his shot is a little bit weirder now.
It's worse. Like, it's definitely worse.
Yeah. And yet, even though he Jordan shrugged, you knew when the second half rolled around, the prospect of him giving some Chick-fil-A to the people was very likely to happen. And it did. It was so funny that I think the first time he got fouled, it was a bad call. And yet I think the arena kind of booed for about a half second, and then they realized, oh, wait, Ben shooting free throws.
It was one of the wildest things I've ever seen. The arena got happy when the opposing player went to the free throw line on a borderline call. I've never seen that before. There was real palpable excitement for those free throws, though.
I have a confession to make.
Credit to the fans. Like, I thought when he initially got introduced, I thought it was a little less than I was expecting. Then they spent the entire first half booing him every time he touched the ball, which he ran a lot of offense, so he touched the ball a lot, or at least he brought the ball up. They were into it. I thought they were into it in the right ways. Like, a lot of times Philly can make the news, and a lot of times that's, you know, national media sort of like nitpicking in ways they wouldn't nitpick other cities because of the reputation. But fans didn't give him any ammunition on this one. They were just real vocal and passionate, and I thought they did a good. I thought all parties, quite frankly, did a good job. I thought Ben, in his interviews before and after the game, handled it pretty well. You know, I thought Ben actually played. Like, I saw some people, oh well, he's exactly the same. He hasn't grown at all. Well, you go back and listen to our podcast from a couple weeks ago, like him looking like old Ben Simmons was
a big step up. Yeah,
it's a big step up. Yeah,
I have a confession to make. My YouTube algorithm. Gives me some Stephen A. Smith.
This can get to some dangerous territory here.
Well, it gives me some Stephen A. Smith every once in a while. And
I love it. Do you have like family members who just don't understand like social media and YouTube? They'll be like, hey, go to YouTube and see that video on the front page. I'm like, Dad, that's not really how that works. Our front pages are different. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sure I do. I haven't had that exact conversation, but you know, my mom's pretty bad with technology. I'm sure she would be confused by it. But I get some Stephen A. Smith every once in a while, and he was ripping the Nets, and I was like, okay, I'm going to click on that. And look, there goes the algorithm again. It's an endless cycle. But anyway, I saw him call the Philly fans' performance on the night classy, which, like, look, these are my people too, and I love Steve sticking up for Steve, as Kevin Durant calls him, on a national stage, sticking up for Philadelphia is pretty cool. And I know what he meant. Like, it was... it could have been a national incident that people latched onto, and it wasn't. That said, there were arena-wide F. Ben Simmons chants the entire second half.
Oh, sure, sure.
I love Philadelphia. I love pretty much everybody in that audience. But classy might not be the first word I would use to describe it. But that said, it was cool, and I know what he meant, that it was not a huge story, because it wasn't. And you know, I think that was for a lot of reasons, right? That was because Ben is not as good. There's been time that has passed. I think, frankly, the Sixers don't have their best guys. Joel not playing.
There wasn't a lot of juice for that game. Yep.
Lost a lot of juice. So, honestly, the good thing about that game, because it turned into a really fun one, the juice was just right. Like, they were booing him. Yeah, there was the occasional F. Ben Simmons chant. But, you know, the Sixers were playing well. And then it just turned into a basketball game where, you know, an undermanned team was trying really hard on a national stage. And that was cool.
No, the first half was about Ben Simmons. The second half was about basketball. That's all you could have asked for. It was perfect.
And I will say, because I hammered this home, it is good to see that Ben is not the player from the first few weeks of the season. Literally, the second we dropped that pod, he started to play so much better. So maybe I am responsible for turning him around, because... it was bad. And I know the player that he's going to be is still insanely frustrating. Zero shots in the fourth quarter, not looking at the rim all that much. And he's not a player that's going to fix the Nets defense, for sure. But look, it was not like watching Chuck Knoblauch on a basketball court and somebody else to touch the ball the entire game. One other thought on the Nets. I don't know how they're 20th in defense. That seems way too high. They're unserious, and they're bad players too.
There was one week where they had, I think, the second best defense in the league. It was one of
That's right.
of the weeks where the Sixers were top, and it was like, there's no way this is real. There's no way.
they're bad defenders who don't try. And then to top it off, some of those backup lineups that switch literally everything with Joe Harris and Seth Curry on the floor.
Joe Harris is so bad.
That turned into
Joe and Kyrie, like they're terrible.
That turned into a Tobias Bully Ball ISO. That was, he could do it against four players on the court and have success with it. So that was a fun game. I know we're a little late on that, but I just want to say that was, I mean, the Bucks game was pretty fun. We've had some pretty fun home games over the past couple weeks. So that's been cool. Obviously, Joel's huge, huge game as well.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Yeah, they've been playing well at home. Outside of that one Minnesota loss, they haven't really lost at home in a while, which you like to see. All right, let's go to Paul Reed.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big part of the basketball being the story in the second half of that game.
I
think the Nets game was probably the best game he's ever played.
I agree.
On a real stage, like, you know, he'll give you.
Whoa! Was that some G League shade there?
Yeah, it was. Look, this is big boy basketball, Paul. We're talking about here. I just thought his energy and activity, like he's shown that he can do that for 10 minutes. I think he had played 20 minutes, and I looked at the box score. I was like, man, he hasn't committed one foul yet, and he's been active as hell, and it's. He's been awesome. I think his, you know, what's been cool over the past couple weeks, and you only see it once in a while, his decision making around the rim has been really good.
And I think when you've seen that now, you've seen he actually has pretty good touch and body control around the rim. Like he has had a bunch of layups where he catches the ball, spins his body completely under control, soft touch. As long as he limits himself, specifically with the dribble, you don't need short roll B-ball Paul. You need ISO B-ball Paul.
Not delay B-ball Paul.
No. When he limits himself, there's a useful offensive player in there. And part of that's when you're playing center, like what you have to do to be useful on offense is a lot less. Put some pressure on the rim, you know, roll to the basket, draw some defenders, get some easy buckets. That's it. That's all they need him to do. And he will, well, he should play a fair amount of minutes. He should be the backup center. I think he's done enough here over the last couple of weeks where he should be the primary backup center. It should be his spot to lose. Part of that's going to be that he still has to win Doc's trust, and I think some of that is on Doc, but he has to just not make some of those preventable mistakes so he doesn't give Doc any ammunition to send him to the bench. And if he does that, there is, I'm fully convinced there is a useful backup NBA center in there.
And I think to Doc's credit, I have not seen Paul Reed get yanked for 3.5 weeks. I mean, part of it
but I mean, it'll be easier to do that when you're, you know, 35 minute per game superstar center is back too.
Sure. But even in these games too, it's like, yeah, the only time he has been really taken out of the game, like Trez starts the game, but Reed plays more minutes unless there's foul trouble.
Yeah.
And even in, I guess it was the Orlando game, Reed had foul trouble, but he closed the game. He was the one who was, or maybe it was the Charlotte game where Paul didn't even play quite as well, but he was the one who closed it. And Trez gave him some decent minutes. I think Trez is playing okay for now, but I completely agree that Paul should be getting the backup center minutes. I mean, he's
playing completely fine offensively for now. His defense is still a disaster.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and honestly, his offense too is, he's just a much more natural playmaker than Reed is. I mean, center right now in the NBA, it's a passing position. A lot of it, like it's a lot of pass and screen and get your guards open. It's a huge connector type of position. And that comes a lot more naturally to Trez, which is important for him because him as a finisher, I know he gets some runouts. He gets some dunks as the just screaming at the cat right now. Unbelievable.
All he wants to do is I've got a mic stand. He just wants to use it as a scratching post right now. And it's driving me insane.
So B-ball Paul at the rim is shooting 71% at the rim. Trez is shooting
low 50s,
58%. Okay. That has gone up a little bit. Now, look, I think Trez is probably a little bit higher frequency, That's it. The problem with Trez is that he doesn't make the contested layups anymore. He doesn't beast a guy for a rebound, go through his chest, and finish. That's Clippers Trez would do that. And you're not getting that from him. So, yeah, agreed. Like, Paul Reed at some point here is going to have to be the backup center. Primarily, look, he's still going to have some bad games. He's still going to drive you crazy. But I feel like he's gotten a lot better offensively after, you know, a dreadful week. I don't know, what was that, 3 weeks ago, where he was just horrible offensively? I mean, God, the pass he made after the rebound, he had an offensive rebound against Orlando, and then he threw a cross-court bullet straight into Tobias Harris's shooting pocket for a three. I mean, that's good stuff from him, man. That's what this team needs. Don't turn the ball over. And he's been good.
Yeah. No, he has. He has. Him and George. And I'm not really sure how much we can talk about George, because it's just like, I think all pretty obvious. Like, he's shooting the snot out of the ball. He's giving you way more off the dribble and attacking closeouts than any of us would have had any real reason to expect. And quite honestly, like, I think he's moving his feet a little better defensively, certainly than he was last year when he was playing through, what was it, a knee injury at the time. But even, I think, when he was in Utah, like, he seems like he's, and look, it's not like he's in perfect shape, but maybe he just got a little bit better in shape and he's moving his feet just a little bit better and he's a little less noticeable on defense. He's playing real well, and he's obviously competing. He's obviously trash talking. When and any time period where he makes 60% of his threes, there's going to be, like he has in the last three games, there's going to be a lot of trash talking that has come through both in person and on the broadcast. He's given them a real dose of offense, shooting, energy. He's played real well.
Give the people free chicken nuggets. Give the people free chicken nuggets. Yeah. Now, that was very funny when he said that in Orlando. I wonder if the Magic guys were like, what the hell is he talking about right now? I mean, that might be the best trash talk. Obviously, he should be a fan favorite because of that. You mentioned his body. The other thing I like about George is, like, he'll bring it up off the cuff. He'll be like, I don't look like an NBA basketball player. He's like, I get it. Yeah. You know, he gets in a little bit of a tussle with Ben Simmons, but because of course he is the one who does that. But yeah, it's like you said, the big thing is that he's shooting 46% from three on almost 10 attempts per 36 minutes. That's, like you said, that is, in layman's terms, shooting the snot out of the basketball. And also shooting 54% from the field on twos, which is close to a career high. And it's I think we've mentioned this before, but when you play this drive and kick offense when you're undermanned and the floor is completely spread, he's pretty good at attacking a closeout. Like, he can actually get shots off. Now, sometimes he'll run into a guy on a Euro step and he'll throw up a floater and maybe it goes in or it doesn't. But
that's the perfect description, too, because he literally just runs into him. His foot speed's never going to win a race. And when that defender, he thinks the defender's not off, or when he thinks the defender is off guard and he's not, he runs into him. It's a good way to describe it.
He runs into guys a lot, though. And he gets a couple of, if the defender is not positioned correctly on a slot drive, he is so slow that he gets end ones because the ref sees that contact more easily than they would. He's the opposite of Tyrese Maxey. Maxey has to accentuate that contact. George doesn't have to accentuate it because it's like, I mean, it's like you're watching it in slow motion to the point where, and he makes those finishes. So he's a, look, man, I think obviously he's a really good shooter, and that is something we talk about a lot. He's a guy who talks shit, which is perfect for Philadelphia. But the other thing that has translated to the NBA, and not on a huge role, it's kind of like we're talking about with Shake, not asking for George Niang pick and rolls here. But George Niang, when he was the minivan at Iowa State, like, he was, you know,
he could pass.
They would run the entire offense through him, and he's a super skilled basketball player in a lot of different ways, and you see that. So
a super skilled basketball player in a YMCA body.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, which is why the biannual? Except, no, it wasn't biannual. It was part of the mid-level exception, only part of it. That said, kind of a steal for that contract. Like, if you're telling me you're getting a super positive regular season player for the full mini mid-level, they didn't even have to pay that for him. So he's been really good for them.
So we're not getting a reprieve yet on the injury front for Sunday's game, as Embiid, Harden, Maxey, and Thibault are all listed as out. We don't really have a true update on Joel Embiid. The initial diagnosis was he missed those first two games. the Brooklyn and Charlotte games and then be reevaluated. We haven't necessarily gotten a full-fledged release on that reevaluation and how long you can expect him to be out. He has obviously now missed one more game and another one coming up here with that foot sprain. So I don't, and I think Maxey is probably, what, maybe about 2 weeks away, and Harden probably at least another week, maybe another 2 weeks. So we've still got some games here to tread water, but hopefully the reinforcements are on their way soon. They've done a pretty good job here of holding the fort while that happens.
Yeah.
Is there any, as we kind of close this off, is there anything you're really looking for here in this upcoming stretch? We've got, obviously, the second in Orlando here on Sunday, Monday in Philly against Atlanta, and then the Cavs, Grizzlies, and Rockets. Two pretty interesting games there against the Cavs and the Grizzlies before the schedule gets easier once again.
Yeah, you know what? Honestly, like, more of the same of what we're talking about, but it's really just about holding the fort. Like, the Sixers probably, you know, the talk of the one seed, that looks like it could be hard just because of the injuries and how well the Bucks and the Celtics are playing. But they've had a really good week even before tonight's game against the Magic. Like, to go 2-1 against this schedule this shorthanded is... That's really good. And honestly, the one game they lost was Charlotte. That was a schedule loss. They couldn't make any threes that night. They didn't
play
horrible.
And they really, like, they came out on fire in the first quarter and then just progressively, like, you could see the legs just go. Like, every, even corner three, short threes were coming up short. They had nothing left.
Tobias and George just short the entire night from three. And that's, like, look, that's okay. I thought Doc, to his credit after the game, he said, like, look, I'm okay with how we played. Like, that was a team that was rested and we weren't, and we couldn't make any threes. I will say the Sixers, their Jedi 3-point defense though is getting pretty absurd. I mean, they're at like 31 something percent for opponents. Like, the league average is like 35. It's, I don't know. It's, they've been pretty fortunate with that. And we're getting to be a quarter into the season, but honestly, man, just the goal has to be to keep treading water here. Just keep figuring out ways to scratch out a win or two. Look, they are 10-9 right now. Let's say they win tonight. If they get to 11-9 with Embiid playing 12 games, Harden playing 9 games, Maxey playing
together maybe like 5.
Yeah, playing 15 games. That's okay. Like, that's, you're probably not going to get the one seed, but that's a decent job holding down the fort while you freaking have a million key injuries at the same time. So that's all it really is. And, you know, there are some lessons that they can learn, but really it's about getting a result. And they've done that well so far. It would be massive if they could get this one tonight against Orlando. That would be pretty big. But who knows? It's hard. Like, they have a pretty small margin for error, and they've done a great job considering that being the case the past week.
Yeah, and I think their goal is when Joel and, let's say Joel and Harden, because I think they're the two that will come back the soonest, when they get back, be 500. And if they can do that, they're in a pretty good spot. And you've got, like you said, one over 500 right now. You've got one against Orlando. That's winnable. One against the Hawks, that's probably tough, but it's not impossible. Like, if you can beat the Nets, you can probably at least compete against the Hawks. And then you've got, okay, Cavs, Grizzlies, tough games. Rockets, Lakers, Hornets again. Like, you've got some winnable games, and then it gets tougher again after that.
Joel should be back by that.
Yeah, Joel should be back. Harden should be back. Harden could be back by the time you get to Lakers. You know, by the time you get to the next homestand. So they have a chance here to be 500 by the time most of their key players come back. That's a really good job. That's a real good job. And it's like I said in a tweet the other day, you're not going to win a championship by beating Orlando in November. But that's a real good win just to keep yourself afloat, keep the mood around the team good, keep you competitive in the standings, and build up guys' confidence that they can maybe step into a bigger role. And if they can continue to do that here and be around or above 500, that'll be a good stretch. It'll be a good stretch.
Completely agree. Yeah.
All right. I think that will just about wrap it up. Thank you, Rich, for jumping on, and we will talk to you soon.
See you, man.